starting here. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right. I'm Nicole Curcio, and I am the marketing and PR person here at Habitat Rejuvenation. So welcome, and thanks for coming. Rejuvenation has sponsored the Street Meets Home Tour for several years now, and we're really excited to be a sponsor again for the 2010 tour. This is the second year we've hosted a mid-century modern event to help raise even more funds for the even more funds for the Street Beans Fund for Homeless Public School Students. And wow, what a great turnout. Thank you guys so much for coming. I really wanted to say thank you to Darla Cristago for introducing me to Mr. and Mrs. Romer. Where is she? She's high up there. She's in one of the Oak Hills dorms, and was tremendously helpful in getting this going. So thanks, Darla. Thank you all so much for joining us for this evening with Street Meets and Robert Romer. If you have questions, if you have one of those little forms we handed out at the beginning, you didn't pass it in yet, if you want to pass them this way, I'll run to the end of the aisle and collect them. And if not, then great. And so let's get started. I want to introduce Heather Hardy, the director of Street Meets. So,
hi, thanks again for coming, and thank you Rejuvenation for hosting. They've done an amazing job. We just feel very fortunate that they invited us back to do this with them, because we spend a lot of our energy on actually getting the tour to happen, so having these extra events is really fun and very helpful for the Street of Beans. And just wanted to give you a couple background bits on the Street of Beans. It was originally started 4 years ago, this will be the fifth year this year, as a modern home tour to help raise money for an after-school program at Chapman Elementary School. And it was started by a group of volunteers. The two key ones in the back, Caroline and Sherry, raise your hands and wave, and back it here. And they got together with this idea that we need to do something that involves the greater community to help solve this problem of supporting the homeless children in our neighborhood. Chapman had this after-school program that had had funding for years that got dropped, and the tour really became the lifeblood for this program to help these kids have a safe place to be after school with extra enrichment activities, academic support that kept them in class, you know, at the level that they needed to go from grade to grade, and really also just to have really positive role models with other adults. And it continued to be this really positive thing that really helped these kids move forward. So much so that, I mean, the tour was very successful, as you know, and because it was so successful, we were actually able to partner with Beach Elementary School in North Portland and start a similar program up there at a school that actually has about 25% of its population qualified as homeless, meaning that they are in transitional housing. So we feel like the Street of Beans has really made an impact over the last 4 years in helping a large number of kids stay in school, continue to progress in school, and have a much more level playing field with the rest of their students. So we're very proud of that. And it wouldn't have happened without this lady here to introduce. So Becca Cavell is one of the founding members of Street of Beans. She actually studied architecture at the University of Liverpool, and during that time came over here for a year as an exchange student to the University of Oregon. And I think that's probably where her love for Portland probably started. But she has now been here as a principal at THA Architecture. She's been there for about 12 years. And right about the time the tour was starting, she had applied for a grant from the Van Evero Bailey Fund to document modern architecture in Portland. And that was exactly the right time for, you know, our group wanting to promote these homes that had really great architectural stories. And so that partnership grew, and Becca has been the person behind selecting many of our houses. She teaches at the University of Oregon School of Architecture, and her students actually do the research and some of the writing around the stories for the houses, and actually docents on the tour. So it's just a really neat partnership between the community and the students. So with that, I'll give you Becca, who's going to talk all about the great run.
So I don't want to take too much of your time. What I'm going to do is three things. I'm going to very quickly tell you what I know about Robert Romer, and then give you a very tiny history of mid-century architecture, what I've learned working with students over the last 4 years. And then we have a few images of contemporary Brummas as they are now, and I want to use those just to talk very briefly about what it is that I love about these houses, and perhaps that will reflect some of your thoughts too. But very quickly, we want to introduce you to Robert Brummer himself, and I will ask a couple of questions of him. But I really want to encourage you to write your questions down on bits of paper, pass them to the ends of the rows, and I want to ask Robert your question. I wanted to show of hands, who lives in a Brummer house? Actually, sit down and do this because I have to do a microphone and a remote at the same time. Okay, so Robert Brummer and Phyllis Brummer, who's right here in the front as well. Robert is to my left over here. Raise your hand, Robert. You can put your hand up. I'm going to be up here in a minute. Thank you very much for being here. Oh, sorry. So what I know about Robert Brummer is, of course, tied into the question of the Eicher houses, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Robert worked in insurance before he decided to change his career and go into home building. And he had built his own house, a family house, in Newburgh, Oregon, I believe. And Phyllis, actually, this is all Phyllis's fault. Phyllis was in California visiting Walnut Creek with her sister in 1959. And I'm reading all of this basically from an Oregonian article, I believe. And you saw a Joseph Eicher house and loved it. But you had just moved into your family's dream house that you were going to live in forever. And so when you came home with this story, I believe your husband wasn't very impressed and didn't pay any attention at all to you. And so it wasn't until a little later on that Robert was working with someone on a house and was shown a magazine article, a Look magazine article, of an Eicher house. And he had an epiphany, I believe, and realized that there was something pretty special about these houses and that perhaps he could achieve a similar style here in Portland. And so that was the beginning of Brummer and Holmes. And they were built around Portland in a variety of subdivisions around town. But those of you who live in them know that you're in sort of Beaverton, Southwest Hills, a few of them sprinkled in other areas. And you had a very successful career building these houses. You did consult with Quincy Jones a little bit. Quincy Jones worked on some of the Eicher houses in California, and he gave some insights into design. And in the 1970s, you moved to a more traditional form of house construction, and I believe you've been retired for about 20 years from house construction. And you can come up here and correct me in a minute if I've got a lot of wrong. So come and join me on the stage.
You get old, you get deaf. Okay. Right.
These slides quickly, these are just views of Brummer houses, and we can come back to these with questions, I believe. Some beautiful photographs that Nicole acquired from Bob when she visited with him recently. Just gorgeous images of houses. And here we have one of these houses today. One of you probably lives in this house. If you live in a house, just raise your hand. One of the most important things that I wanted to share with you is that Robert Liss, his prime influence is Frank Lloyd Wright, and I think Frank Lloyd Wright's spirit underlies a lot of what we see in mid-century architecture today. And Taliesin is the name of one of the developments that has Brummer houses in it, and so I love that tie-in to Frank Lloyd Wright. So my
turn that back there. I'd like to say something.
Okay.
That's in Beaverton on 145th, and behind the subdivision back there is a grove of trees, and I dedicated it to the city of Beaverton, and they had the gall to call it Eicher Park.
There's a little history, this is Becca's version of the history, and you can all correct me. I didn't know until I started teaching this class to my students at the University of Oregon, because I had no clue what I was talking about. We learned together that ranch houses, I had terrible derogatory terms when I first moved to Portland, ranch burgers, you know, all these awful things. But a ranch house, or ranch house, as I should say, actually has a true history. They really were houses on ranches in Southern California and Mexico, haciendas. They have a true beginning as defensive fortresses against the sort of horrors of the plains. You could enclose them, you could put gates on your courtyards. They had a courtyard for a reason. It was a protected outdoor living space from the horrors of the wildlife, whatever it was that's happening on your ranch that you didn't want to come in, marauding people. So Green and Green in California, Green and Green started to re-envisage what a ranch house was as a modern house. And then we had, I skipped over. Frank Lloyd Wright. We have a series of modern masters here, also very influential. I'm going to go quickly. I could talk forever about all of this, but I'm just going to sort of show them. This is the Gordon House. This is a later house, 63, but obviously Frank Lloyd Wright had a very long and an illustrious career. And he, in turn, was very influenced by Japanese architecture. This is the Katsura Imperial Villa in Japan. And there has been from the 19-teens, through obviously the 50s through to today, a very keen interest of anybody who cares about design in Japanese and Oriental style. And we see this, people who bring this spirit to your houses and other houses of this era. We have the pure modern movement, Mies van der Rohe and his work in Germany and then later here in the United States. And that strongly influences the work of the 1950s as well. This is one of my personal favorites, the Barcelona Pavilion, a pure sort of intellectual exercise in structural form. In the post-war years in America and in other places, but very much in America, we have the GI Bill here, people returning from the war, vast factories who were repurposed. Prefabrication became a very interesting thing. Massive suburban development across the United States. And cookie cutter houses, perhaps, but also they look terrible when they're first built, and we see that now. But as the vegetation matures, and as people move in, as families change and the houses change, these are true, meaningful communities and have true importance, I think, in our lives today. And on the heels of that, we have Sunset Magazine, very important in the development of mid-century architecture. Cliff May was a very significant publisher and very interested in pushing this form. And so they published a couple of houses on, they called the Sunset Western Ranch House books. You can get them now, they're reprinted, with these fascinating plans and drawings. Again, very influential in the sort of work that was being built by developers such as Bob across the country. And of course, the Eichler House is the California manifestation of many of these interests. And they, for me, this garage or garage that you have at the front of the house, that is one of the sort of real changes. So what's different about these? I ask my students, why are these houses different to the houses that went before? And it's the importance of the car, the celebration of the car, the automobile, the way that these streets were laid out, cul-de-sacs and so on. It's to do with the car and the houses. Made these little, they turned in on themselves, made secret courtyards. They often had greenways at the back of them, and so there were separate places for people with feet to go versus cars with wheels to go. And so it's a completely different way of making residential development and settlement. The interiors of these houses, you're all familiar with them, post and beam construction. These are period photographs of these houses. Because this is California, the swimming pool is a very important part of many of these houses, and outdoor living is essential. And up here in the Northwest, I'm very interested in regional modernism. It's one of my particular interests, and what brought me to this whole thing in the first place, an interest in the work of Pietro Belluschi, and here of John Yon. This is the Watzik House. How does this mid-century style manifest itself regionally? This again is the Watzing House, which is off on Sunset, Skylight, excuse me. It's a spectacular house. And the work of Pietro Belluschi, another local amazing master of the style, who went on to obviously an international career and fame. And Van Ever Bailey, who I'm very fond of because he funded the grant that I managed to get, which helped us kind of launch this whole thing in the first place. And why do we love Brummers? Actually, this should be, why does Becca love Brummers? But maybe I'll speak for some of you here. We love Brummers because they're simple. They are understated. They sit in their forested sites, in their communities well. They support, for me personally, they support color. I love what is done with color in these homes. I think modern architecture can be very white. It doesn't have to be. I love the atrium spaces. They can be enclosed, they can have skylights or not, they can be open to the air. Those of you who have Brummers may have changed the way that they were originally built. The fact that these rooms look into this secret space is very, very special. I love the radiant floors. Many of these houses have beautiful exposed concrete. These are photographs that we have got courtesy of John Valves, and I don't think any of them show the exposed aggregate floors, but those that have those are wonderful. And many people have repurposed them with tile, but they've kept the floors so you can still feel the heat. The post and beam construction, the vaulted ceilings, the abundant natural light, the huge windows, the huge fireplaces, the open plan, these support modern family life. And this was another aspect of the 1950s. The house was changing. The kitchen was central to the way the house functioned. And now these houses, you can see most of the house from any one point. You know where everybody is, but everybody can retreat. They renovate beautifully and can be reimagined in any number of styles. They look terrific furnished with my favorite furniture. I'm very envious. They're very social in an informal way. The bathrooms are fabulous. I love these sunken bathtubs that are in all the houses. I've probably seen 6 or 7 Brummers, and they've all got these bathtubs. I love them, and with these windows next to them, I'd like to take a bath in one of these. I might come visit one of these. And again, that they can be redone in spectacular ways. These houses support color beautifully. And one of my favorite things, this isn't, not all of your houses have this, but many of them have these little rooms at the entries, which can be either the bedroom. There's a door here to a hallway. So this could be a bedroom, and it can be an office. It can be anything. It can be a playroom. It could be a garden room, a study. They're so flexible. I've seen them used in all of those ways in these houses that I've seen, and they're fabulous. And basically, I just think that these houses are beautiful. I think that they're inspired by California and by the work of Joseph Eichler. I think they work very well in Portland, particularly if they have sloped roofs. There are some issues with flat roofs in our climate. But there are some problems with flat-roofed houses in our climate. But a good roof on one of these houses, one that's built to last, these houses work beautifully in Oregon. And I'm so glad we have them here.
Always get a kick out of people asking me about flat roofs.
Well,
you look at all the office buildings downtown?
Oh, they all have. It's true. And I'm a modernist and I support flat roofs. So can we all please welcome Robert Brummer? I'm going to ask two questions, and then I'm going to start asking your questions. So make sure you write them down. So my first question is, how do you feel about the historic preservation movement? And should your houses be restored or should they be reimagined?
Could you repeat that?
Yes. How do you feel about the historic renovation movement? Should your houses be restored or reimagined?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, is with all the modern products there are. I would love to have had all that stuff, and I like what the people are doing. We get invited several times. There's just one person in there tears out walls, but outside of him. I love the way they do it. And one of the things that I can't believe is that one of the gals took all the tile up, cleaned it all up, and then she stained the concrete floors. It was beautiful. And I just don't believe a lot of the stuff that they're doing in the imagination that you architects are doing. Just having your fun, aren't you?
Are these houses fun to work with?
Oh, yes.
I think they are. Okay. So do you have, of all the houses that you've done, do you have a favorite? I was wondering, maybe I might flip back to the plans. I want to have the plans up here, so forgive me.
I don't have a favorite.
What do you like about these houses, personally?
It's called indoor-outdoor living.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Here.
There.
Because, yeah, this is one of my personal favorite things, are these extra rooms here. Mm-hmm. Outdoor living. The court, the atrium, or the street, or the back? What part of the outdoor living?
Love the atrium, but...
Do you prefer...
That was probably the best seller that I had. And I want you to read down there, PF280. That's $28,000 it sold.
I'll take one.
Real estate commissioner more than what they sell for. I mean, what I sold them for. Even the building permits are less.
Do you prefer the atriums with or without the glass?
In this country here, we tried every way. The only thing is, was the old fiberglass is all we had. And now they've got these double layered insulated fiberglass things. They're made out of better products because fiberglass does deteriorate. I would like to have them covered. In fact, if it is, one time somebody here has built one with a moving back and forth, it's just beautiful. That's what I would have liked to have done. But there was nobody around that could do it. If you knew what the... I got a question. How many lenders are in here?
Not for one.
Well, I'm still going to say what I had to say. You have no idea how my wife and I fought lenders to build these houses here. Absolutely. We tried to build them together.
They wouldn't sell.
They won't sell. They're goofy. You have no idea. And that's why I can't understand what's going on in the present day. I just have no idea that what we went through is hell with them. Another thing is that I was talking about Eichler again. There is an area that I built called Menlo Park. And I've been accused of stealing that name. Well, I bought those lots from a guy by the name of Fred Weber. He named the place Menlo Park. I didn't. But I've been accused of it. But I've done several things. There's one of the houses, the atrium's got a swimming pool in there because the gentleman had arthritis and he had to swim every day. I guess there's one in Bowman Park that had stone in the front with the carports on each side that I built for a very good friend of ours. In fact, that was the third house we built for them. And of all the houses I built, I think that one would probably be my favorite, and that's right in there in Taliesin.
In Taliesin. Great.
I don't know who lives there, but it's still my favorite. The only problem I had with that one is she wanted carpet in the kitchen.
Did she get carpet in the kitchen?
No.
Yeah, I did. With food everywhere.
Carpet in the bathroom is the only thing worse than carpet in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, speaking about the Roman tub that we put in, it's interesting how that got started. And I had a terrible time with the building department on that one because there was no overflow. And if you'll ever look at your window, the window is just a hair lower than the rest of the floors. And if the water's going to come in there, it's going to drain out through that window. So that's an overflow, but they wanted an overflow, like they look in tubs. As far as the glass is concerned, I was on the UBC console. And I was in the glass portion of the thing because the simple reason is we had floor-to-ceiling glass. And the next thing, they come along and they said they want a mullion bar in there. So I put it up 2 feet high, put a mullion bar in there. And then the next thing is that they want a non-breakable glass on each side of the patio. Well, the reason they wanted the mullion bar was to indicate this is a window and you can't go through this way. But then they wanted the glass. Well, I hear now they've got new safety glass that they can put in all throughout the house. But in those days, if anybody here knows how safety glass is made, it's kind of interesting, is because safety glass, when it is heated and bent clear down, and then it's brought back up. And when it gets straight, it's become there a non-breakable glass. And if you see a patio door that breaks today, it goes into fine little pieces. In other words, the glass is broken when it comes back up, but it's clear. But that's the reason. But now, can you imagine 12 and 18 foot windows? They do that today, but they didn't during my day. And the other reason there is no more Rummer Homes is the simple reason is if there was the year of Mr. Carter on 85 and interest rate was at 18%, the building department wanted all these rules painted in the glass, and that's the reason why I finally just gave up. Go for it.
Well, we're glad you built all the ones you did build. Okay, I have a question here, and I hope you're writing your questions down. This is from Cara Frey. Why were your houses built in the neighborhoods in which they were built?
What?
Why were your houses built where they were built? Why are they in those neighborhoods?
That's where the land was available.
Did you buy the land? Is that how it worked?
Like I said, in Fred Weber, I bought a lot of land from him, lots, finished lots. And then I did Bowman Park, which is back in the Vistabrook area. And then I did the one on Denny Road, then 145th. I built in Oak Hills, and if you want to know the truth there, they didn't want me in there the next year.
Tell us
I think
more,
it's because the person I know that lives in there now didn't want anybody else around. Hi, darling.
Why did they not want you to come back?
They were goofy houses. They weren't compatible. I guess I can explain it to you this way. I had a friend of mine that we built a home for, and then they moved to Washington, D.C. in Virginia. And he sent me an article that these people had built in Virginia a home where the house was on the front, was no view out on the street. They didn't have the big picture window out on the lawn and this kind of stuff. And he had his view to the back. The neighborhood didn't like it, and they eventually made the people tear it down. And he was sent us the article. In Virginia, this happened. And I think, all I said is the people who live in my house have got to be kooks. So am I.
There are a lot of kooks here.
Yeah.
Okay. A question from Emily Sirkin. Who else built flat roof houses in 1959? I mean, I could answer that.
I don't know.
Any modern architect worth their salt was designing flat roofed houses in 1959. It was the thing to do. So it was a modern thing to do. But were you the only home builder in Portland making flat roofed houses?
I think I was. That was another one of the problems. They had to put, a slight pitch to it to get it to drain. In other words, people were thinking this way. In other words, if it's sitting there flat and water sits on there, that's no good. Well, I think it's insulation, but that's beside me. But it's kind of interesting is that when you go up in the pitch and they're 4x12 beams, yeah, and you cut them on a cap, we had a big saw that was, you couldn't believe how big the saw was that we cut that with. It was a skill saw with a 14-inch blade. And we cut that cant because some guy tried to copy me, and I'll try to explain to you this way. You got a beam that's flat like this.
Can you hear?
Can you see?
Yeah.
And you got the decking, but you got a decking coming down on an angle. You got the decking coming down on an angle. So you got to cut that cant there. Well, he didn't do it. So what happened was, the beam went right up there because it's nailed. Every piece of decking there is nailed twice. And it just sucked that beam right up there. And then he called me up and wanted to know how he could straighten it out. There's no way. And the radiant heat, which probably a lot of people like to know. The plastic that's underneath there is made by Boeing's. It will stand 180 degree temperature either way. And I can't remember the name, but it had it written on it as we were going there. When I'd come out on the job, I'd make sure that that tubing was there. And another person tried to put it in there, but they got plain plastic and they had nothing but trouble. Because plastic will deteriorate, but this won't deteriorate when it's encased in concrete. And nobody could understand it, but it was an engineer out of Boeing's that helped me with that. And the only people that I had I had subcontractors were my plumbers and electricians, and the rest of the men were working for me and were under my payroll. And they don't build them that way now. No, they sub everything. Piecework, oh God, I don't know what all, but anyhow. But the plumbing, electrical, but that was one of the things an engineer from Boeing's helped us with that one.
You actually answered Tom Kern's question, which is, what's the pipe made of? So you, that's good.
I don't know, it was designed by Boeing's, it's in the planes today. It's the tubing that runs through those planes that'll stand that pressure. Because in there, it's encased in concrete, but in Boeing's it's free. It's laying out on the ground, and they can put 180 pounds of pressure against it. It won't even budge. It won't balloon. So I don't know what it was made of, but they're probably got it in everything now.
Well, I think the radiant floors are one of the things that make these houses so appropriate to Portland. I think radiant heat is the best heat to have in Portland.
Makes the toilet seat warm.
Okay, I have a question from Patty, and Patty is asking, what was your vision, of how an atrium should be furnished or decorated? Your vision.
Jungle.
Do you, some of them are filled with plants. Do you like that?
That's right. I like the plants, yes. Yep. And there's some people that put tile in there. Mm-hmm. But it depends. If you got children in there, it's a good place to play when it's winter time too.
Yeah. I've seen at least two with koi ponds. So fish ponds.
Right.
Yeah, which are beautiful. And that's a real tradition. I mean, that's Roman, to have a pool in the middle of your atrium. I was wondering, where does the water, when they're open, where does the rain go? When it rains, how do they drain?
Through the planters.
So into the
ground. Oh, then I had a drain underneath there that went into the downspout stuff.
Oh, okay. Are there any more questions?
Yeah.
Okay, if I can collect questions to the front somehow, that would really help. Thanks, Robert. I do have a question here, and it is how, this is from Joni, and Joni asks, how do your designs compare to Eichler's?
Surpass? Or? No. You got to remember one thing, if they were built in the warmer climate, we had to put more insulation as much as we could, the rigid board. There was a lot of changes that I had to do to apply to this weather here. But I doubt if there is one house in here that has a beam that's turning. One of the things that I was very particular about, and there could be one or two, but when the load would come, I'd make sure that they were free of heart center. I call them FLHC, which you do as an architect. And I was very careful to watch that, but those beams that I got were all coming out of Forest Grove, out of the Tillamook Burn, out of old growth.
So salvaged old growth.
Yeah. The lumber yard over there was the one there.
And your siding is cedar siding?
Redwood.
Redwood.
Redwood siding was made by George Pacific, and only for me, and people used to go in and try to buy it, and they'd turn them down. And the decking, the ceilings came from Potlatch, Idaho. Mm-hmm. And one time we had three houses ready to roof, and they dropped the wood there. And Leonard, my superintendent, came over and he said, "Bob," he said, "this is not ours." And I said, "Oh." He said, "It's rough cut." I said, "Well, let's put it on." And they called me up and they said, "I think we delivered the wrong one." I said, "It's already nailed up." But I made a mistake, because one of them was my model home, and then the people wanted rough cut. So there's times that you can be smart and not be.
Christina asks a question that I'm going to elaborate on. Christina asks, where do you live now? Is it a mid-century home? I would like, could you talk a little about the houses you have lived in? Rather than simply, where do you live now? Have you ever lived in one of your own houses, one of these?
Yes, I lived in Bowman Park, and I lived in
Cynthia Terrace.
Where?
Cynthia Terrace.
Cynthia Terrace. As my daughter says, have you ever had a subdivision named after you?
She's Cynthia?
Yes.
Oh.
You ever had a street named after me?
I think that your name has become an adjective because houses are rumored these days, I think. Mm-hmm. And so it's your name is gone beyond you.
Amazing.
I'm still here at 82.
Another technical question from Lynette. Lynette asks, what is the electrical conduit that runs under the slab? Is there electrical conduit under the slabs?
Yeah, there's some underneath there. And there's some on top of the roof. In fact, if it is, this lady called me from Oak Hills, and at the high peak, she had a light go down in it. They were going to they were going to tear it all off. She just had it re-roofed. She didn't tell me this at the beginning. They were going to charge her a fortune, that kind of stuff. And so I went out there and I looked at it and I said, you mean to tell me you just had it re-roofed? It looks like they put a nail through the conduit. And I said, put a wire up there and pull a new one down, because I said it goes from to the box up there, goes down and through the plate, and then the wire goes on down to switch or wherever it is, and just put a new wire in there. So they did it. She said it didn't cost her hardly anything, but that's a lot of these people just sit there, and all the wiring on the roof is in conduit. All of it. In fact, if it is, we used to roof the house, frame and roof, and get it ready, and it had to be ready for the dry sheet on Friday, because in Oregon you have rain that comes in every weekend. And so the thing is that we always had there, but on Friday morning, the roofer put their dry sheet down, and then the guys would run the conduit and all the stuff and do all the cutting and all that stuff, and then have everything ready in case the storm did come. Because I know one time I built a house in Salem, and Griffith Roofing was doing my roofing in those days. And I was going to Salem, and all of a sudden I saw Griffith Roofing coming back up I-5, and I thought, oh God, that can't be them. So I turn around and try to chase somebody down on I-5 or something else. I finally caught up with him, and he says, no, the guy wanted to make a detailed drawing of everything before we could go up there. I said, you gotta be kidding me. So I went down, and his wife was getting a VA loan, building under the Veterans Administration. And I might have made him sign an agreement that he held liable for anything that went on, and a storm did come in that weekend. And those beams spread between an inch to an inch and a half back almost off of the beams. We had a terrible time with it, fighting it. Because you gotta remember, all that stuff's kiln-dried. And then when they get wet, boy, it can cause, because wouldn't they say that they used to raise wood by putting dry wood underneath there and keep pouring the water on the pyramids? That's the way they raise those stones. Find out when you have it.
How long did it take to build a typical house?
60 days.
Wow.
And another thing is that I called the building department. I could get a building permit in one day.
In one day.
And I would call up for an inspection, and they said, we'll be by. Go ahead. And I built the only houses FHA without FHA inspections. I didn't tell the Bill Minnick while we're forming went to FHA, did I?
I have a question from Kurt, and Kurt is asking, did you feel that being an innovator was worth it.
Well, let's put it in a little different way. I did the first subdivision and brought it into the city of Newburgh and expanded the city limits of Newburgh, the first person since its existence. I built the first tri-level and I built the first split level house in Yamhill County. I'm always doing something crazy, let's put it that way. Our original home, you probably heard this story, but my wife said, the Oregonians sent out deals at people what they wanted in a house. And then they drew this plan, some architect drew it. She said, that's what I want. So we built it. Then she went to her damn sister's place, come back and says, I found the house I'd like to have. Well, I threw it away until some attorney come to me and wanted to know if I would build a house. And he had the idea. Then she went back and she told me that's the house I wanted.
I think we should thank Phyllis, don't we?
Wasn't that easy.
So this question has no name. Somebody doesn't want to be associated with this question. I love it. Were you officially trained as an architect or something else?
Well, when I got out of the service, I wanted to go to the University of Washington School of Architecture. The school was full. Because I don't know what happened, but there was a lot of VA, these GIs coming and going to school. Of course, we had the GI Bill. So then I tried again at the University of Oregon. So then I took art, and I have a degree in art.
From the University of
Oregon? I'm a frustrated architect, let's put it that way.
I think you've achieved more as in architecture than many architects do in their careers, so I commend you. So, from Daria.
Oh, God, no.
You said your wife fought the lenders, you and your wife fought the lenders tooth and nail. It sounds like she was inspired by Eichler. What was her role in your building development projects? And did any other architects inspire you? Daria, that's two questions. You got one piece of paper. So, first question is, what was Phyllis's role in your building projects?
She backed me.
I was the gopher. And color design.
Color?
Oh yeah, she didn't stop there either yet.
That's for sure.
That's what I like about what the houses are today and the colors these people are using. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Like that house with the red door.
Yeah.
I guess that house was in terrible shape and those kids fixed it up. So I'm real proud of them.
Now, going to Daria's second question, other architects that have influenced you, I know that you're a big fan of Frank Lloyd Wright. Can you tell us why? And if there are other architects who you admire, we'd love to hear.
No. No. Frank Lloyd Wright was so far. I just like the way he did things. I don't know whether you people have ever been out to the house in out of Silverton.
The Gordon House. Yes.
And you get in there, and of course I start to see if you take the mortar, everything on a line. If you take the mortar, everything on a line. I disagreed with him. He didn't think that he slept in. And anything else is out in the dressing area or this kind of house, which I admire.
Couldn't change it.
No, I don't know of anybody else.
He's definitely a master.
I like him.
Yeah.
But he was, I think I told you, people ask what, this from Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones built the Bank of California high-rise buildings in San Francisco, and that's what broke him, not the houses. And Quincy told me at the time, he said, I keep telling him no, because you cannot build your materials and everything is different, but he wouldn't be told. He was a Jewish man, and he wouldn't be told elsewhere.
So when I asked you that question about ICLA, I was under the misapprehension that ICLA went bust because styles changed, and he didn't. And so there's a question here which relates to that ICLA business move.
There were just absences. The building departments wanted.
Yeah.
You could do it under conventional, but you couldn't do it with the type. English, 4 or 5 years. Has anybody ever heard what happened in 85? And then we got the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah. What was the first, what year did you build your first house? And what year did you build your last? So 85 is probably your last house.
I'm 82 years old.
In the 50s.
It was in the start of the 60s.
Your own house, the house that you built for yourselves in Newburgh. When did you finish that house? 1958?
Oh, no. She got it related to when her daughter was born,
60,
I know that.
1960.
What? Cindy was 3.
Well, now, wait a minute. We were living in that house in 57, wasn't she? Is that
Cindy
when she was born?
Cindy was born in 57.
I have to do
were
that.
We living in that house?
It's okay.
1250.
And the majority of those are in the modern style? This is the same question. Sorry, two people asked the same question. And how are we doing for time?
We have all night.
Hell. I only have two more questions here. Another roof conduit question. Where would the roof conduit be in a flat roof?
Huh?
Where would the roof conduit be on a flat roofed house?
Where would the what?
Conduit, the electrical conduit. If there's a flat roof.
On the flat roof.
It just runs on top. Does it run on top of the roofing?
What we did was that we had the deck, then we put the conduit down. Then after the conduit, we would cut in the insulation.
It's between.
It wasn't stopped on the insulation.
Yeah, that makes
the only reason you put it on conduit is the simple reason is it wouldn't get crushed.
Yes.
And then we fed the single wire.
So flat roof, slope roof, it's there in the insulation layer under the shingle, or under the membrane.
The only mistake, and I can tell you everybody here that owns one of my houses, if I recommend doing one thing, change the downspout to 3 inches. Pine needles have a way of really stacking up and plugging there, and we drilled everything on 2 inches, and they should be 3 inches.
I think some people have already done that.
The trees got big.
And we have a question here from Emily, asking about the relationship to the ICLA plans. Some of them appear to be copies. Did ICLA know about that? Was he upset?
I guess he knew about it, but he was never upset. He was probably more upset. A lot of background that I do know about him, and I got it through Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
he was more upset that he wanted his boys to go on with him, and one of his boys wanted to be a politician, and the other one didn't want anything to do with it. And he was probably more upset about that. But no, he branched out and went into Los Angeles and fell flat. So I don't think he'd ever want to come to Portland. And at that time, Portland wasn't as...
Metropolitan.
Metropolitan?
It wasn't metropolitan, yeah.
It was too much country.
Little provincial. So he was aware that you were building these.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But there's nothing, you know, the thing is, it's interesting, there is nothing that is original. Nothing. In fact, if it is, this place here comes up with, they don't have originals here. They make copies and that kind of stuff. So I guess the only one that was original, and why I like Frank Lloyd Wright, was he was original. Yeah. But he, if we go back into history, we go to Pompeii, and that's where the word atrium come from. Yeah. And you go back into there, in the Roman days, they built this type of home. So what's new?
What goes around comes around. I love that these houses are beloved now. And what I've found is that many of the people who want to buy your houses now are creatives. People who work at Nike, people who are artists, who are shoe designers, who, a lot of Intel people as well. But there's a buzz around your houses. And it's a recycling of fashion from the 50s and 60s, but it's also, I think these houses are standing the test of time, that they're working for today's families and today's lifestyles in a pretty extraordinary way. And I'm really happy that people are seeing that. They're not called ranch burgers anymore. They're called rummers, and people love them. And I think that's great.
The only mistake that I made was that when we first moved back up here, I should have redone some of the houses. But I didn't know, had absolutely no idea. I just found out something tonight that in Taliesin, that one house, that first one on Glen Court, these kids are buying it. And it was really run down badly, the one we looked at. They're fixing it up, and I have that picture at home. I'm going to get it. But anyhow, because they're really going to town fixing it up, so I want to watch it. And so I enjoy it.
It's fun to see. You know, there's another question. I must have been a second half of a question. Somebody did ask if you have all the drawings for the houses.
Do you really want to hear it?
We really want to hear it.
Yeah. It's going to make you cry.
I had every tracing, all in tubes, in my attic in 1997. And as we got ready to move, I threw them in the Dropbox. My wife wanted to wallpaper a house. I mean, the wall with them. She didn't say anything about them. I just threw them away. But I had every tracing of every house that I built. The original tracings that I'm talking
about. It's a tragedy. And we have somebody in the audience who didn't listen very well because they've asked a question that you've answered, which is what happened in 1985 that caused you to get out of the business?
Anybody ever heard of Mr. Carlin?
Don't do that.
I'm not supposed to bring that up.
So politics happened in 1985 that put an end to the construction business for a little while. And you got out just at the right time, I hope. Well, let's pretend you did.
Sounds good.
I think that is the end of all questions, and I wanted to thank you, Mr. Rema, for being here with us. It's been wonderful to visit with you, and on behalf of the audience, I want to say
thank
you.
Can I thank these people?
Yes, and I hope you will stay and chat afterwards and have another glass of wine.
I won't talk to Darla. I won't talk to Darla.
Everybody for coming, get home safely.
Oh, John.